Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. How are you?
I'm all right. So this week, we are taking a break from our regularly scheduled programming because I have really sad news. Our dear friend and, you know, he was a guest on Latinos Who Lunch. The artist and journalist Ed Fuentes passed away this past week. And it's been a shock just because he was such an advocate for the arts here in Vegas and in LA. And I'm just really happy that we got a chance to talk to Ed on Latinos Who Lunch. So I'm thinking today we should re-air his interview with us.
Right. When we had Ed Fuentes, we had the opportunity to talk about our monuments, to talk about murals, and that's what he did best. He always recorded the history of muralism, of Chicanx muralism in LA, and when he moved to Las Vegas, he decided to continue and do the same work. If you are a Chicanx artist in LA, you probably heard of him or you met him because he was in every single opening. He was always there to support no matter what. He was the first person to write about Latinos Who Lunch, the very, very first person in the beginning. He believed in us without asking any questions, and he was always, always, always promoting. So he was a promoter, a cultural promoter for Chicanx artists both in LA and Las Vegas, and he's going to be greatly, greatly missed.
Yeah, and he used to write for KCET, if you guys are familiar with that site. And one of his good friends, James, wrote about him, and Babelito put it in the links to this episode. It's in remembrance of arts journalist and advocate Ed Fuentes. If you want to look up that article to learn more about him and see everything that he wrote for KCET, I just want to read a quick excerpt, is that how you say it, from the article that was just written in his honor. It said, Ed's ability to have a presence while being modest and meek was truly unique and a consequence of his humble demeanor. There wasn't a hint of superiority with Ed, and he tended to downplay what an important role he played in so many people's lives. I'm thankful for Ed's service to and passion for his fellow artists, his ability to make art more accessible to so many people, his newly discovered career as an art professor, as well as his love for his parents, Lisa, and his friends. And of course, all the memories he has left for each of us in the arts. So with that being said, here is Ed's episode from January of 2018 with us here at Latinos Who Lunch. Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like...
It's so hard to be Chicano.
Hello, hello, hello.
Que show, que show. No puedo terminar. Que show.
Oh my gosh, are you still sick? You know what we need to do?
What?
We need to align your chakras and have a new moon ceremony next time.
Tengo el chakras lleno de piedritas.
Where's your crystals?
Shit, I took him off. That's because you touch it, so it's that's like soaking in salt. That's why.
Do you really have your crystal in salt?
Yes, it's in my mom's house.
That's really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to do it. I'm embracing all epistemologies that were negated to me throughout my 10 years of graduate studies.
Alleluia.
Amen.
All right. On today's show, we have one of our favorite Chicanos in Las Vegas. Maybe the only Chicano, not just like
there's a bunch of us out there.
None other than Ed Fuentes is in the house. How's it going, Ed?
Hola, good to be here. Good to be here. Great studio. We got a view out here. The hot tub is working.
Yes.
The tamales are hot in the corner. There's people serving drinks. It's like a casino in here.
It's like very authentic. It's like we're in Lindo, Michoacán right now.
Yeah. We're gonna have people singing happy birthday pretty soon.
Yes. So how's it going, Ed?
It's going well. Happy 2018 to you and your listeners out there.
Yes. It's a good one.
It's a good one. We got to recover after this year. It was a rough year.
It feels great, even though we're all sick.
No, we're all sick.
I know. We're starting the year and with
starting
the
year coughing
con
up.
La pata equivocada.
So we went to our favorite Jewish deli here in Las Vegas.
Oy, dele. Oy. And I have the brisket.
What do you eat?
Well, I had a matzo ball soup. What did you have?
I had the half sandwich pastrami with the chicken noodle soup.
Damn. And I had half of my, I don't even know what I had. What was it?
Hash.
Oh, yeah.
Salt.
The mother of all hash.
Meat and salt.
Meat and salt and potatoes. But no me sabía nada la comida. Like, everything. You know, when I remember being young and then hearing adults saying, like, ay, I can't eat because toda la comida no me sabía nada. And I'm like, that's never going to happen to me. Today was that day. I'm officially fucking old.
We have a little gray.
Yes.
A little gray somewhere there.
Let's call it salt and pepper for
now. Okay, we'll call it salt and pepper.
Yeah, let's call it salt and pepper.
Well, you know, I felt something today that I hadn't felt in a long time, and I was really excited about it. I felt hungry, so... 2018 is off to a great start. I'm feeling things that I haven't felt in a long time.
We were in the parking lot. He's like, I'm hungry. And it feels good.
In other words, like a couple of days, I didn't eat anything for a couple of days. I think everybody's trying to recover from whatever was going around. But we're all good. We're all good now.
And we're enjoying this beautiful weather here in Las Vegas. Shout out to everybody in the East Coast that is enduring of this grueling weather. Shout out to all our Caribbean and Latino Americans.
All the frozen Chicanos
in the East
out
Coast,
in the East.
Yes, that are just dealing with it. And anyway, pobrecitos.
So, Ed.
Yes.
Let's learn a little bit about you. What are you doing here in Las Vegas? What do you do?
That's what people ask when they see me. What, you are where?
Because
and you came here?
I know a lot of my LA friends know who you are because you were part of the LA scene for a long time.
I come up, huh?
Yeah, of course. And shout out to Ramiro Gomez.
Hey, shout out, my San Bernardino buddy.
Yes, exactly.
And he was like one of the, he called me one time and says, I think I know you, but he went to see an installation I had at the Casablanca Library and we talked about it a while. And that was before he kind of blew up. And so it's like great to see him grow. Then it's great to see him on the show, hear him on the show, and you guys talking tacos.
Yes.
Talking our whole history of Inland Empire tacos.
Yes.
Well, I didn't, but we just got high and went to LACMA with Ramiro. That was beautiful.
Yeah. You just like to air everybody's dirty laundry. Yes. That's wonderful.
It was awesome.
There was this, what's the guy's name?
No sé.
Ken Price?
Uh-huh.
Show? Oh, is that the guy's name?
Which piece?
The Marlboro Man piece?
Oh, Richard
Prince. Richard Prince. Fuck. Yes. I mix my white people up
and
all the time.
Andas mal en biología.
There was this horse that looked like it had a wig on it, and I couldn't stop looking at it. So if you guys go to the LACMA, this is Latinos Who Lunch Scavenger Hunt. If you go to the LACMA and you find the horse with the Farrah Fawcett wig on it, take a picture and send it to LatinosWhoLunch@gmail.com and we'll send you a sticker. Okay, back to you, Ed.
So I come up. That's good. That's good to know. But what I'm doing out here.
What are you doing here in Vegas?
Well, I've been here for a while now. It's almost seven years coming out to visit a relationship, and then I started to think, well, there's not a lot of art out here, but I started looking around to see what public art was going on, and then I ended up going to Nevada State College for an integrated studies degree in video and visual media and English to kind of like support all the writing I was doing for KCET. Talking about murals and stuff for my blog. So taking a look around and seeing that, you know, there was a little bit of a pulse of public art out here. Then going out to the galleries and saying, hey, there's some activity going on.
So can you tell everybody the name of your blog?
I write at paintthisdesert.com.
Paintthisdesert.com. Okay.
Also on Twitter and Instagram, and write about public art in the West and the Southwest, grounded in Las Vegas, and kind of exploring more about galleries, but going out to LA, and of course, natural transition to talk about the Latino artists out here, and that's how I found you, Justin. Like one of the first people I found. I said, man, this guy's good, you know, and because everybody was talking about you. I mean, that's when I started, you know, finding out what was going on, and your name always came up, just in art in general, not Latino art, Chicano art, but art in general. So and then started looking at the articles about you. Then there's like a lot of great artists out here, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of great artists from here who are out and around.
Yeah.
And so that became part of my capstone project at Nevada State College, taking some of the stuff I'd written before, exploring the area, and coming up with the argument why a blog's needed out here, or why an online media coverage was needed. And I took that, and it was my capstone project. And, you know, you kind of learn how to write, and I did anyway, to learn how to write grants or try to find grants. So
you need to teach us, because we have a grant due like in a couple of weeks, and we haven't even started. We're petrified because I mean, there's different types of writing.
Oh, yeah.
And grant writing is something very specific that I still haven't mastered.
Right. And then you have the academic prose versus regular prose.
Yeah.
And academic prose versus regular prose. So, you know, that's where you have to figure out your audience. Mm-hmm. And I lucked out because it was the first grant I tried to apply for. I did it as a test run, and I got it. And it was a Creative Capital Andy Warhol grant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
To create the blog and fund it for a year.
So that's what jump-started the project.
Yeah, that's the only way it was possible to start because,
yes.
You know, there's like in Los Angeles, in downtown Los Angeles, I was with a group called Blog Downtown. And I had my other blog, View from Aloft. And there was like a collective of bloggers in downtown LA. And we were covering everything. Mm-hmm. And from city policy to the cops, to government, to art. And so you had a little support group. Out here, there was nothing. You know, there was, Paco has a blog.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much. And I wasn't sure if I was going to try to do one. Because everybody, when I moved out here, people from LA were saying, are you going to do a blog? And I go, it's kind of dry out here. I mean, it's like a little tough.
It's the desert.
Yeah. Well,
and I mean, it's like the first thing is you just think is, right, I don't know how much resources there are. But so that's why I decided to go back to school, mm-hmm. get the BA in visual media and English, and which became just a visual media degree. And then I got the grant, and I went, well, okay, I got no excuse now. Let's go out and do it. But, you know, you meet everybody and you kind of like poke around because I just like to poke around and meet people. Some people don't respond because I guess like when you have new people come into a town who say they can do stuff, you hear that all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Vegas is the worst when it comes to that. People are very territorial here.
Yeah.
So it's like a new person coming in, especially from LA.
But I was suspected that. I felt that right away. And I knew coming out that was sort of like how it might have been. Sometimes it just takes the right people to open the doors. I mean,
mm-hmm.
All the roads also left to Patrick Gaffey. You know, they led to him.
Shout out to Patrick Gaffey.
Shout out to Patrick, and who was really one of the people who really started public art out here.
Mm-hmm.
I went in, introduced myself, told him what I did, and we ended up having a good little conversation. And then we kept in touch and kind of guided me along to say what was what and what was where. And then when I told him I got the grant, he was like happy about it. I mean, he was really enthusiastic about it and really kind of got me in directions where to go and who to cover and who to meet.
Yeah.
And was telling people, hey, this guy's real. This guy's been writing in LA for 7 years now. You know, he knows his stuff. So that helped. But it also matters just going around and introducing yourself. I think after a while, people got tired of my pitch. Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I do such and such. And so you just gotta just do it.
That's the advice I give to a lot of artists is if you want to be part of an art community,
you
can't just sit at home and complain that you're never included in anything.
You have to go
to all the openings. For like 10 years, I went to every opening in Las Vegas, and I didn't miss anything. Mm-hmm. And now I don't go outside, but I mean, that's what it took because people need to trust you and see that you're actually invested in the community and you're not just there bullshit.
And in a way, that's what openings are for and conferences. It really is to showcase each other and to network. Like that's what you have to do. And sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it's annoying, but you got to do what you got to do.
But that's why I appreciate you, Ed, and paintthisdesert.com, because if people want to know about what's been happening here in Las Vegas, they mm-hmm. can go back, right, in the archives and check everything out. There's other blogs, too, that are literally documenting the scene right now. There's Settlers and Nomads.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the two.
And we got two.
And Latinos Who Lunch, I guess. We have a lot of Vegas artists here. Oh, so.
And also, before we forget, Paint This Desert was the first, Ed was the first person to really write about Latinos Who Lunch.
Yes.
Like anywhere. Yeah. Yes.
And I'm just going to give you a lot of shout outs right now, Ed, because you are also, not only are you writing about Las Vegas, but you're also putting us in a larger context. You're going down to LA, you're going to different shows all around, and also writing about that to show people that there is a conversation happening between the art scenes here and there, which I think is really important. And because you write for KCT and so many other places, you're also giving us shine. And you gave me a very, you were part of a very special birthday present this year. I was actually in the LA Times on my birthday on July 7th because you wrote a story for about me. And then that was picked up by the LA Times. Which is awesome.
Shout out, that's awesome.
I tell you, that was like, if I got that done, I thought, okay, I don't know if I have enough time to keep doing it because it's sort of self-funded now.
Yeah.
But since you were like one of the first artists I met and you were like, you work your ass off. I mean, you're working it all the time. And I thought, okay, I got Justin in the LA market.
Yeah.
My work here is done.
That's it.
Dude, you did it.
And, yes. But that was sort of like, you know, you kind of keep with connections and you kind of like, you know, kind of keep writing and like your stuff I've been following. And I told you before, I could probably write about you once a week just because your work's so interesting. But I don't because then it just looks like I'm just sucking up to be on the show.
Yeah. And I'm paying you.
And
anyway, the check will clear soon. Okay, I promise.
I tried to cash it 5 times. And has
I
over.
Know. Just wait. Ahorita que pase la quincena. Okay.
Toque la tanda.
But I was going to, when you had, you know, because your Lowrider Piñato was at the Peterson Museum, I said, okay, here's a good chance.
It's still there.
Yeah.
There's a good chance to write about them and give context to the artist instead of being dazzled by the epic piñata.
Yeah.
And so I pitched a couple places and got it on one blog, and then KCET wanted a version of the story. But I also nudged somebody at the LA Times, hey, you're going to see a big piñata pretty soon. Keep out for it because it's pretty good. And that's how that story came about. I think they probably got noticed about it, but otherwise. But the more people who poke at them and say, hey, take a look for this, you know.
And that's a perfect example of what Luis from Nos Vemos en el Swap Me talks about in his t-shirts. No seamos envidiosos. Like, we gotta help each other, man.
Yeah.
We gotta always help each other because sometimes we're out there alone in an ocean of white art, in an ocean of white media, white music. So if instead of being envidiosos and being all territorial about it, the more we help each other, forget it. Like,
exactly. And that's been my mission from the beginning with Latinos Who Lunch. And I say it over and over again. And it's not only to send the message out, but it's also to remind myself, because I'm going to be real. Like, I was brought up in this very capitalistic, fucked up world that we all live in. And I mean, we're kind of trained to shit on other people and be jealous of other people because it's a dog eat dog world and you're killing it. Everything's so fucking violent, right?
Yeah.
But no, we should find joy out of seeing our friends, seeing our people succeed. That should be, if everybody thought that way, we could really rise to the top. You know what I mean? I mean, it's happening.
And it doesn't have to be just about hype. It doesn't have to be about, you know, laying layers of gloss on something that doesn't deserve it. You could just write straight up, this guy's a good artist. He's bringing in this big piñata. He has this background in his art. And he's answering to looking at what Chicano art is to him. He's looking at it from a different direction because he re-entered it from a different place. And you just write stuff like that. And people, you know, kind of pick up on the objective reporting. And they make up their own decisions. But the work is good. The work is good. Sometimes somebody wants to see something and they understand the work right away. A little bit of context help. Sometimes the work is like formal, like zombie abstraction. You have to have this long-winded thing to explain it.
Let's talk about this.
Okay, first. All right, so.
Well, thanks for the shout-outs.
Of course. There's a recap here that needs to be done. So you were based in L.A. You moved to Vegas. You got your B.A. And now.
I am in my final 3 classes. I'm an MFA. It's studio art at UNLV.
And what are you getting your MFA in?
Studio art.
Emphasis on anything or just general?
Just being a nuisance.
Perfect.
Installation.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Installation because art. Installation.
I know you're a photographer. You do a lot of graphic design.
So my stuff actually has taken a look at filmmaking. My midway was started from a prompt from a short fake art street art documentary I did at Nevada State College.
Okay.
So I advanced it and created this idea that I, as an arts writer, found this archive of this fictitious street artist and made Grant Hall into a museum with these artifacts. Mm-hmm. And so the thesis show continues on with that idea. So it's installation, it's painting, it's film, it's murals, it's graphic design. Happy to bring graphic design into a fine art realm.
Yeah.
And it's writing, because you're also looking at the idea of text as art, sculpture. It's a little bit of everything, but it's also about fictitious characters. So based on when I did the Midway was right after the debates and before the election, the idea of lies was in my head. The ideas of fictitious history was in my head. And man, has that thing like not like gone away. It's still active. Damn. So
speaking of, there's an episode of, because we just started watching this show on Netflix called Black Mirror. There's an episode of Black Mirror about specifically what he's talking about.
That show fucks me up.
It's crazy.
I can only do like one a week.
We're watching one tonight. We're going to watch that one tonight. Okay. It's crazy.
I'll watch it with you guys. We'll see.
Okay, yeah. Get the popcorn ready.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So you're going to get your MFA soon at UNLV. Right. How has your experience been as a grad student in the art world? I mean, because your experience at UNLV, I don't think, is unique to grad school. So, you know, there's a lot, like you were saying, abstract...
Abstract formalism, zombie formalism, MFA abstraction. I'm doing some pieces for my show that kind of plays with that idea, making fun of MFA programs or MFA teachings and stuff, because that's what you get to do. If you're a cultural critic, you can critique everything, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my experience at UNLV, you know, you just got to find the right faculty who work with you and get it. And, mm-hmm. you know, not everybody's going to get you. And, but you find out the ones that understand it and are supportive, and some don't. I mean, I almost didn't get in.
Yeah.
You know, because some of the work was older. The murals that I came in with was older, and the logic was, well, he's not, like, dedicated. But then you go, well, you know what? I've been writing to learn how to do grants. I had to do something else for a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Because I was, like, a graphic designer. I mean, I was, like, I focused on being a graphic designer from the age of 25 to 40. And that was the only thing I identified with. And so you kind of had to break it up a little bit. I'm glad, because like, I didn't expect that I was a writer, and I'm actually doing as much writing as I'm doing more writing and photography than I am design now.
So what was the reaction of faculty when it came to your mural stuff?
I think that because there was a lack of Latino curriculum, they didn't understand where
Say
the
it.
Murals...
I still got that grades. One more time.
Because there's a lack of what?
Latino art curriculum.
Yes.
So
at a school in the Southwest.
That is trying to be a Hispanic serving, or that is a Hispanic serving institution.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the irony.
Yes.
And the stuff that I had was based on the work I did at the UCLA Digital Mural Lab in Spark, my own commissions that I did later on. And nobody got it because it was digital images, not as collage, but storytelling. But nobody got it. And it was a paid commission that I had. And then I kept doing new works, but nobody got it.
What do you mean by that?
They just said, well, it looks archaic, or it looks like old, or it looks like not contemporary. And now, after...
Whatever the fuck that means.
And now...
Not white?
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe, okay.
But probably. But then when we come back, I mean, from PST LA, and see now that stuff is as contemporary as anything else.
Yes.
But it was always contemporary to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there's like different substrates you can use.
That's why in my introduction to art classes, I always dismantle hierarchies and those types of categories. Because that's what it does. It creates difference. And it's not serving anybody except for one group of people. And we need to stop doing that, because that's what's keeping us outside of these institutions, is what's keeping us outside of the museum spaces and the gallery spaces. And the fact that us as a community not only have the privilege to create art just for self-expression, but also for political reasons and personal reasons, and the fact that they don't understand that, it's all ingrained in the same idea of hierarchies of what's supposed to be fine art and what's not. So when you dismantle those categories the first day of your art studies, then in a way students are going to come, are going to start researching and looking into art with a different perspective, instead of coming out of a 4-3 year program where they think that something is contemporary, something's not, because that's fucking bullshit, you know? And when you told me that story, I was furious. It makes me so mad because I've heard that before, not only in UNLV, but in different universities around the country.
Well, it happens too. I mean, when I was looking at PhD stuff, because I was kind of thinking about doing it, I was talking to faculty members. Some were from, I mean, there's a one case of one place I won't say. The guy was from California, assistant professor was from California, and it was somewhere back east. And he had told him about what I was doing with murals in California. And I said, you guys cover California artists? And he said, you know, he asked the administrators in charge to start considering California artists. And those administrators at this university said, oh, that's a boring subject. Nobody cares about California artists. Same thing happens with Latino artists. And I told the guy, I think that kills it for me, but let's just talk for a while. And we had a great conversation. But yeah, can you imagine that? And that's the East Coast perspective, which can also be different perspectives. It's like nobody wants to let go of their hierarchy. Nobody wants to let go of their status.
They don't.
And I'm sure probably will be the same place sometime. I mean, it happens with blogs. A, I didn't like it when new blogs come into town.
Yeah.
Lose my status. Because, you know, you kind of lay down the groundwork. But you also got to let them, you got to let everything happen.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think one of the things that we learned this semester in the Contemporary Latin American class, which I taught that class, but Ed was so much help this semester because it was a semester of terror, and he actually took over a couple of lectures, and it was amazing covering Chicano art. One of the things that we learned in class is that when it comes to art, I think the idea of reappropriation in a way we can put a little bit aside, because when you have people that care about art, when you have artists that care about cultural production, then there's always going to be a reciprocity in terms of contribution. So Latin America contributed a lot to the contemporary art movement of New York. The same thing as the New York art movements contributed a lot to the contemporary art movements of Mexico. So it's not about people reappropriating each other's cultures or anything. It's just there's a group of people that are creating art and they're feeding off of each other. The problem is that the people that are writing the books are the people that can get into the grad school program. And for the most part, I mean, at least in the past 30, 40 years, we're mostly white writers. Things are changing now.
And that's the important thing about what the Getty did with their initiative of Pacific Standard Time, LALA, and having 60 galleries and institutions and all these catalogs that have come out, and everyone.
I bought like five. They're so good.
They're all good. I mean, yeah. Every place like this, you'll have a clunker show too. But this one, you're looking at an 85% ratio of great stuff.
Yeah.
That is going to be part of scholarship for a long time. And it also shows, like we were talking about this, it shows that art has two migration patterns, not just east to west, but also from south up north.
To north, exactly.
And Las Vegas is the junction of it. I think Las Vegas in the southwest is the junction of contemporary art. When it comes with that, when that linguistic pattern, when it comes with that visual references,
I cannot agree more.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Do it.
There you go.
Do it. Yeah, and I think it was important for us this semester to see that not only we saw it with the art that we learned about, but we actually got to go to LA and got to see some of the exhibitions and saw it with our own eyes.
How many times do you get to have a great textbook on contemporary art, and then you had the chance to see the actual artwork in person reinstalled after not being reinstalled for years?
Exactly.
Right, with a light show. But also, to be fair, it's. I have to say that I think, okay, I know my Chicano art stuff. This contemporary Latino art class is going to be, I don't know, we'll see. Took a look at your curriculum, your list. Oh, shoot, I could maybe lecture 1 week.
Yeah.
Maybe just 2 weeks. You researched like almost everything possible. And I saw you at the Barrack Museum doing the research, sweating bullets, because
every fucking day
you were teaching yourself before you were teaching the classes. Yeah. It was like all familiar to you. It was like all new to you, right?
Uh-huh. Most of it was new. There's certain things that I had an idea about and I've read about. There's subjects that I knew, but Chilean, Venezuelan, Colombian, even Central American, Brazilian art was all new to me. And that's the biggest lesson I learned, that there's a pattern of migration of ideas throughout the 20th century that never stopped. And the way that I learned it in school was that there was just one hub of art. It's like the avant-garde only happens in one city, and everybody learns from that city, and that's bullshit.
Right.
That's never the case. That's never going to be the case. The idea of the center and the periphery, we need to get rid of that, because there's everybody has their own center, and we all got to learn from those ideas. And yeah, that's exactly why I think remaining in Vegas is important, because it dismantles some of those old school ideas.
So now I think that with you, and also there is a couple faculty people at UNLV, to be fair, who are like really supportive of what I was doing. They got it right away.
That's cool.
But they never had a way. They didn't have anybody to come in and kind of push it through and insist that this was legitimate. And also because, you know, maybe because I was in graphic design and on the commercial side, the best way for me to cope with it was kind of, okay, you know what, maybe they're sort of like a client. They're rejecting the idea. They think there's something there. I'll think of something else. And it came up with an idea I never would have thought of. And it actually tapped in on that whole two-sided thing. What are murals? What are street art? The focus was sort of like what street art is in our visual vernacular. And it came out with a different show. And I thought it was interesting. It's been a lot of fun, too. Yeah. And it also kind of supported the writing, too. Because sometimes when you do art or you're trying to write, that two parts of the brain aren't talking to each other, but
yeah.
The shows that I was doing, they were communication with each other, and that was good. Now, Justin, your stuff, it fits in right in with all this, too. I mean, you were sort of ahead of the curve with your projects, and we have to probably, this is probably another lunch, but we probably have to show you how, but I think you probably kind of got connections with where the piñata is, the lowrider, and how you... You probably talk about it off the air, too, all the time. But I hope you somebody just did the show, even though you saw the different shows. Did it give you a different perspective of your own work?
In L.A., the PST shows? Yeah. Well, I was just happy to see work that I could relate to and that, you know, was like that Mexican art history, that the 18th century painting show that we saw at the LACMA. Oh, I had taken Babelito's class before, so like seeing the work in person,
that was crazy.
Like, it was incredible walking in and just remembering the paintings. Like, I never thought I would see those paintings in person.
Yeah.
And just to see them there, I was just amazed. Going to see the Radical Women show at the Hammer is just great, because I didn't know about a lot of those artists, and so you know, a lot of my work maybe before was referencing white artists, like my faves, you know, like Ed Ruscha or Oldenburg. But now I'm really thinking about, like, okay, it's time to shake that off, because a lot of those artists were actually, I mean, according to a lot of the things that you taught in your Latin contemporary class, Babelito, mm-hmm. a lot of those artists were actually just ripping off Latin American artists. So,
and they go and back.
So that's what I learned. Yeah.
When we saw this Argentinian artist. Her name is Marta Minujín, and she has these crazy pieces that reminds me a lot of Oldenburg. I show you a monument that he covered with bread, and then he dismantled the monument, and people went and just started eating.
Oh, there was a model of it. At the Craft Museum, right?
Yes.
And Folk Art Museum. Uh-huh. Yes.
So, like, there's, again, the ideas were coming back and forth. Alan Capro, who's like the guy who started Happenings, mm-hmm. like performance art in a way, he declared Argentina, I mean, Buenos Aires, the city of happenings. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of activity happening at all times. And I think it opened, especially for my Latino students.
Yeah.
I think it opened that. I opened the opened a view of things that they could be inspired by other artists besides the canon. Because the canon, it's much more complicated and much more diverse than we happen to learn in school. And that, I don't know, man, if I would have had that when I was in my undergrad studies, poof, forget it.
Maybe it was the opposite for me, because my first reporting was about Chicano art and Latino
art in
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so you get that perspective. And I'm from a neighborhood that had murals there as early as 1971. Which almost predates everything in like East LA or even San Diego. And they were a direct pedigree. There were Alcovar was a home of the, was the CEO for the Casablanca Home and the Neighborly Service United Way Agency, and but he was working with Cesar Chavez up in the Central Valley, and he saw the murals going on. It's about 68, 69. So when he came back down to Casablanca, because he'd go back up, he started saying, "Hey, well, who's a good artist around here? Let's put some murals up." That's what they're doing up in the Central Valley. So my barrio was like had a direct pedigree to this whole mural legacy. And so, and then doing, and then like you and I were talking about earlier that we were theater kids and we were doing, you know, probably sets and stuff. And so you kind of learn who to rip off early on. But I guess for me, it's been kind of cool to start reporting on this stuff, doing my research as a reporter from the Chicano Latino art side. And then later on, looking at what the white guys were doing. And you're kind of going, oh, you know, this is familiar, but I'm connected with the work only because I had what was being going on before. I said, well, I wasn't sure who was ripping off who. And now with PSD, you said, well, everybody was ripping off each other at the same time.
Which that's is great. The beauty of it.
It's just like when we when the Los Esgrandes were in New York and they were all feeding off each other, whether, you know, New York artists, or when Siqueiros came out to Los Angeles and he was being feted by all the artists of Los Angeles at the time and they were feeding off each other. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be.
The muralist working in New York and being inspiring all the abstract expressionist artists. There's a lot, but I'm glad you mentioned the idea of Cesar Chavez and muralism, because for our communities, muralism are a form of resistance and they're a form of survival, but there are monuments. And you and I talked about this before, and I want you to elaborate a little bit more on that notion, because that's, again, another example of how we make art for many reasons besides just the idea of aesthetics, the idea of beauty, the idea of self-expression.
I mean, murals were the original podcast. You know? I mean, it's like if they were trying to figure out a way to get information out to the masses and creating a cultural identity, and Los Grandes led the way with the other artists, and really, but it was really big political cartoons. You know, and going back to Jose Guadalupe Posada, who inspired all the artists as a lithographer working in newspapers, the idea of information being converted into images so people can understand the context.
Correct.
But that idea that content was created by political conflict, or what way you want to support it, then you have to think of a way to visualize it, then you have to put it on walls, then you have to add color to it, then you have to add composition to it, and then you get the story done, because it's all about storytelling, you know. And that's where I think the power of the murals were, and that's where the power I think is missing in some of the murals we see in street art, because it doesn't have that sort of narrative flow. It has the epicness, and it has a scale, but it doesn't have the narrative flow. And but that I think that's where the power of murals are, and that's why they're sort of like ingrained in everybody's mind when you see a good one, you know. But we can, like, this is like a whole other hour. We could talk about this forever. But speaking of Cesar Chavez.
Yes, go for
it. I got a surprise for you guys. I never published this online.
Oh. Damn. Exclusive.
Like, 1 year when I was talking about working at the Home Enabling Service, it was the year I met Judith Baca, who was lecturing at UCR.
Whose art is everywhere.
And who's like in five right shows now at PST, and who I used to work with, and I got to work with a little bit more
amazing
before the school
stuff.
Year.
Judith Baca?
Judith Baca, muralist, who started Spark and the UCA Digital Mural Lab and the city program for Los Angeles that actually inspired the Philadelphia program. I also met Luis Valdez because I was doing some theater down at the Mission Inn, and they were doing a symposium, so I got to talk to him for about 10 minutes, and I met Cesar Chavez. That was a summer when I was like in my early 20s.
Damn, that's awesome. Oh my shit. God, Ed, is that you?
That'd be with Cesar Chavez.
That stash. Oh my gosh, we're going to put this on.
No, this goes nowhere.
We can't put this on.
I never published this anywhere.
We can't put it on our Instagram?
No, you could just like.
Oh.
It's me about 22 with Cesar Chavez in front of a mural, and just like when I was a community arts enabler for the United Way Agency, the Casablanca Home and Neighborhood Service.
Oh my God,
that's so badass. That's a good picture.
Look at, I still have the same hair.
Damn.
Except it's, talk about gray.
Yeah. Salt and pepper.
Damn, you got salt good and hair, pepper. Ed. That's awesome.
Wow, that's so cool.
That's like my little secret, man. I think you're the only ones in Las Vegas who've seen it.
Really?
Why is it your secret? Why do you want to share that?
It's
like your own personal thing.
It's like that little spiritual thing behind me, you know?
You know? You want to keep that power.
I want to keep it because, you know, you kind of give away everything. You give, you know, you kind of put stuff on and you kind of, so this is, If I do a book on me.
Yeah, that'll be in the...
That will be the cover.
A close-up of your stash will be the cover of your book. I can't wait.
But no, that was a summer that, man, everything turned and I didn't do anything with it. I just kind of go, wow, I'm really part of something really big here.
Yeah.
And then when I did my original set of commissions and I found out about Jose Guadalupe Posada, I said, man, I'm part of this long graphic design legacy in newspaper that goes back 100 years. And I think that is what my colleagues in your class, because I was in your class, that's what I think they really understood, that they were part of a large legacy. They're not making it up as they go along. They have a lot of references. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of pedigree. And they're part of this. They're part of this conversation as much as anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, an interesting thing that I learned at the design show at the LACMA. Mm-hmm. Do you know the title of that exhibition by any chance?
No.
But there's a show that shows the evolution of Mexican graphic design.
Architecture. Furniture design.
Through the years. And how, not only how there was this Mexican aesthetic that was started by white artists, right? Basing designs on Aztec temples and on Mayas. But also the erasure that happens of Mexican design and of like the origin of something, right? Because a lot of times Mexico isn't credited for architecture. You know, a lot of architects, a lot of artists that actually started a movement aren't credited because they don't write about those people, right? So in a way, I was really inspired by that. Because, you know, even when I make art about piñatas, they're like, oh yes, piñatas, they originated in Europe as a Catholic tradition and the paper came from China. I was like, bitch, we can't have anything.
Yeah.
You go to Mexico and you see piñatas. Piñatas are Mexican.
Yes.
Shut the fuck up, right? Yeah. So taking ownership and telling your story is so important so that it's written down in history. Yes.
It's called Found in Translation.
Yes.
One of the things I learned from that exhibition, which is wonderful, we took the tour. I was blown away by the California Spanish colonial design and how that started in California, and they were inspired because in the early 20th century, anything colonial from Mexico was like in vogue. And then later in places like Mexico City and Puebla, people were inspired by the people in California. So instead of taking clues about their own local architecture, they went to California to get clues about this California colonial revival. So you can go to neighborhoods in Puebla. You can go to neighborhoods, for example, La Colonia Roma in Mexico City, and it's California Spanish colonial revival. It's mind-blowing. And that fluid of that conversation that goes back and forth, that it's not one person inspiring another person. I hate that word. I don't know why I keep saying inspiring. It's so 19th century and stupid.
What's another good word?
Influence.
For influence.
Yes.
Okay.
Bribe.
So, yeah.
Motivate.
Motivate, influence. So this idea of one center influencing the periphery doesn't exist. It's always back and forth, and forth. That's so.
But it's also about going back to what community is, also getting involved in what's going on. Going in and talking, going in and just taking... I was taking pictures of murals before I had a place to put them and to write about them. And because I did that, I gotten some good habits of when to shoot them. I got to know where the sun in Los Angeles hit. And it ended up that one of the photos I had was in the Found in Translation catalog.
That's right.
It was a document of
in
a mural
show.
That was gone.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So mm-hmm.
I forgot to show you when we were there.
It's up?
Yeah, it was up, and my little name's on there.
What mural is it?
It was in the same room where they have the design from the 1968 Olympics.
Oh, I saw it then. I looked at everything in there.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, awesome. But yeah, then have it in the catalog, but it's just a part of being there.
Yeah.
You know, same thing when you go on to every gallery and just get to know a network, or you go out in the streets and you take photos of murals, find out who did them, see if you can find backstory so you get familiar with everything. And that's part of networking, too, is actually being with the art, not just the people, but with the art.
And that's a great advice, man. A lot of people always ask us, how do we start a podcast? How do we start a thing? Go out there and be part of it. Like, pictures, start recording things, start talking to people, take notes.
Even if you don't produce anything yet, you don't hook up, or
you're always going to have it.
You got your content developed. You're going to learn, you know, the subject matter. You got a little bit backstory behind what you're already looking at.
Yes.
And you're not starting off from scratch. I mean, learning how to publish or learning how to do a podcast, that's a steep learning curve. So at least if you find out what you're interested in and you do a little research for a year or 2 years, then you're not trying to learn two things at once, you know. So that's also just plain research. And that's how, you know, as being a self-taught graphic designer for a long, that was what research was sort of my thing, you know, because you just had to learn it. Because even as a graphic designer, if you're self-taught, you still got to keep doing it because things change, especially in that industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's give a few shout-outs because we talked about LA and PST. I want to go around and tell me your favorite shows. Some of them might be already down, which is sad. I know that Radical Women just came down last Sunday. But what were some of the highlights of the stuff that you saw recently? And maybe some people can still catch it if they go to LA.
Everything was great. Everything was awesome. But one show that I saw three times was the retrospective on Carlos Almaraz.
It's gone.
But it was the most beautiful 80s neon gay, I'm gonna say it, Chicano art show. It was just beautiful. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. I'm gonna try to find links of his art, and seeing it all together just made so much sense. And it was his own aesthetic, it was his own brush stroke, it was his own themes. He was unique. It was so amazing. So again, I will say the retrospective of Carlos Almaraz and LACMA.
Yeah.
What about you, Ed?
You know, that's a tough one.
It is.
That's a tough one.
And you saw a lot of shows. There's a lot of shows I couldn't see. There was the Op show at Palm Springs that I couldn't get to see. There was the Concrete Art show at the Getty that I didn't get to see.
Oh, that was a great show.
Oh, man.
Because I was like familiar with Concrete Poetry that they showed just before that. Palm Springs Lighting. I would have to say, only because it gave added context for me, was Judith Baca's show at Northridge, Cal State Northridge.
Nice.
Of murals and her process, community process. Because you also look at the sketches. You look at the sketches and the renderings, and it's amazing how much of an educator she really is when she's able to have murals done by unskilled workers, like youth. And maybe with them art students and artists, but the work at the Great Wall is so close to what the renderings were like, and that's just great planning, administration, and it's a wonderful piece. I mean, all the work is just incredible, and also to know that it gave new life to what Siqueiros was doing and advancing that to an urban environment in contemporary society. I mean, I think that was. Just to see, I didn't think I was going to learn much more, but I learned a lot more. I mean, and what was good. But every show, I mean, there was, I think, and I'm not going to say which show, there's only one clinker for me, and I'm not going to say what it was, but you took away something from everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody just really just knocked it out of the park.
But what you said about Judith's show, that's important, because when people try to, I don't know, throw shade at muralism because it's passé, because it's not contemporary, when you see the process of how a mural comes together, it's about community building. And you know this, Justin, because you're working on something like that. It's about community building. It's about sketching. It's about design. It's about,
architecture,
execution,
planning,
architecture,
geometry.
Planning, everything. What is it? Why is it not art? Why is it not valid as your fucking painting with two like brush strokes, and somebody's gonna call that like a genius thing? Like, screw that.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I'm gonna say Access Mundo. We got a tour of Access Mundo. It was at the MoCA at the Pacific Design Center.
Shout out Joey Terrell.
Yes,
best tour.
Joey Terrell, who is an artist that was part of that show, gave us a private tour, which was so cool.
It was amazing.
And, you know, I'm excited that it's actually going to open again, because not everything was shown. So we'll keep you guys updated. But Access Mundo is going to open up again in a gallery in West Hollywood.
Oh, nice.
Coming up this year.
Excellent.
So we'll keep you updated. So if you missed it at the MoCA, you can see it again, or different parts of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's and the show is about the queer Chicano scene, back in like the 70s in Los Angeles, which is really amazing. So there's a lot of documentation of performances, videos, paintings, photography, even prose. It's amazing.
And we got the best t-shirts from that, the Joy design. Yes, back in the
70s. There, right? There are t-shirts that on the back say role model and on the front say maricón.
Yeah,
they're awesome. Yes, I was gonna wear it at Christmas, but
I'm still waiting for the right occasion to wear mine. I stare at it every day.
When you walk,
I think I'm gonna wear it to school. I don't care.
Nice.
Scum one day and maricón the other. Yes.
All right, let's take a little break, and we'll come back with some recommendations. And we're back.
Hemos regresado.
Hi. Okay, and now it's time for recommendations.
Let's let our guest of honor begin.
Yes.
Okay, well, I have a shout out first. I want to give a shout out to Cindy Liu. She was a blogger in Los Angeles, a Chicano studies person, and now she's back east under the snowpack being a mom and a research assistant, but she really encouraged me to write, and I wanted to give a shout out to her. I know she listens. So, Cindy Liu.
Shout out to Cindy Liu.
Cindy Liu.
And my recommendation is Canopy, spelled with a K, an online streaming service that if you're a student anywhere, you get for free.
And it's amazing.
Okay, what's on there?
When I was sick and laid up over the holiday, I was watching so many art documentaries you can't find anywhere.
It's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Canopy with a K.
You know, from Philip Guston to just name it. And there's stuff there that you just I didn't know existed. A great way to burn a weekend.
Like I typed photography. I typed black photographers, and I got this documentary from PBS about the history, and was one of my recommendations.
Yeah.
So their search engine is amazing. So.
Canopy.com, K with a K.
Yes. Awesome. I am going to recommend a podcast this time, and it's a local Las Vegas podcast that only has one episode out, so I'm hoping they put out another one soon, but maybe this will encourage them. But it's called Twin Tokes, and
what is it about?
Well,
what is
it's a podcast by two sisters, and they're twins, Beatrice and Bianca, and they smoke weed and just talk, and they're super funny. I actually know Beatrice from the art world here in Las Vegas. She was in a band when I met her, and she's married to an artist that I went to school with at UNLV. Shout out to Spencer Haley. I just love them. I love their dynamic, and I'm so happy to hear more podcasts like that coming out of Las
Vegas.
Vegas,
yeah.
So I can't wait to hear their future episodes, and I can't wait to have them on Latinos Who Lunch if they want to. Or actually, I really want to go on their podcast and get super high. So.
I can't. We tried that once, Ed. It wasn't good.
Yeah, because we were in a public space. We got really high at the Denver Art Museum one time.
I was really happy.
And tried to
talk about art.
Tried to talk about a painting, and I couldn't tell. I was really confused about what was art and what was furniture.
What was colors?
In the gallery. And at one point, I became one with a chair, so I just couldn't even move. It was not good.
Is this a chair? Is this furniture? Is this art? Is this a chair? Can I sit? Oh my God, be careful. You're going to break that.
Okay. Welcome to an episode of Paranoid Art Critic. Okay, what is it? I don't know. What is it?
I have learned my limits since then. And
I will try that again. Anyway,
Twin Tokes, check it out. They're on iTunes. They're on Stitcher, SoundCloud. You can find them on Instagram. Hashtag support Brown Podcast. Hashtag support Latinx Podcast.
Nice.
Babelito.
So I have been lately reintroduced to the art that is Mexican cinema. This is one of my dreams to teach a class on Mexican cinema, but I've been collecting Mexican films, but mostly from the 90s and from recently. There's a lot of, as people like to say, artsy-fartsy stuff that is coming out from Mexico, a lot of French influence. Carlos Reigadas is one of my filmmakers right now from Mexico, but it's really abstract stuff, and it's not necessarily something that you will see out there in the movie theaters. But because I've been into that, I forgot that this sort of very abstract aesthetics on cinema, they are rooted in Mexican cinema for a long time. They've been in Mexico for a long time. So I just been introduced to the art of the cinematographer Gabriel Figueroa. Mm-hmm. And I was recommended by our friend in Mitú, Emmanuel Ramos. And he's like, you need to see this documentary, Visiones Múltiples, La Máquina Loca. And it's just a documentary where it's different interviews with different cinematographers around the world that talk about how incredible the art of Gabriel Figueroa is. I also watched Rio Escondido, a movie with Maria Félix. And I have my love-hate relationship with Maria Félix, but I'm starting to love her more than hate her. Mm. That movie is surreal. It's a mindfuck. It's nationalist. It's stupid. It's gorgeous. It's everything. It's like you get a whole season of a soap opera in an hour and a half. Living. Complete living. So I can't wait to see more films by Gabriel Figueroa, films by Luis Buñuel, for example. And I think this documentary, for anybody that wants to start looking into the golden age of Mexican cinema, it's a great introduction. Again, it's called Visiones Múltiples, La Máquina Loca. And again, shout out to Emmanuel for this awesome recommendation.
All right. So Ed, I just want to thank you once again. And I think this is going to be the beginning of us interviewing more local Las Vegas people, because yes, there are so many awesome people here.
I agree.
And, you know, we're always saying, like, it's so weird that we haven't done a lecture at UNLV yet, or at CSN, or at Nevada State College, or this, or there, or that. Girl. And then we're like, well, who are we interviewing from Las Vegas? You know what I mean? Exactly. So that's a moment to check ourselves. So, I mean, we love talking to people from all around the country, but there's so many amazing people here. And, I mean, you are, of course, on the forefront of the cultural producers here in Las Vegas. And we're so lucky to have you as a friend.
Thankful.
Oh, and man. Thankful to have you as a friend. And on our side. It's, well, it's amazing.
Thanks for producing stuff to write about. That's otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. So this isn't the last you're going to hear from Ed. I want you to come back again when it gets closer to your thesis. So maybe you can talk about that. Yes. And you and I were talking about musicals during lunch.
And musical shamed
and
him.
And he musical shamed us.
He did.
But I feel like we could do a whole episode talking about musicals from the Chicano perspective. That would be really cool.
Or we do them all as Chicano musicals.
Oh my gosh. Okay. No, save it. Okay.
I will just sit here and listen to you guys.
Okay.
Talk about that shit.
Okay, great.
No, anyway, that's it.
All right. Thanks again, Ed.
Muchas gracias.
And as always, you can find us at latinoswholunch.com. Email us your questions if you have any. We're going to do a listener letters episode soon. Thank you to everybody who sent us messages. Again, we prefer that you send them through email so we can all keep them in one nice, neat place.
And send us your questions. That's very important, because that makes for very interesting listener letter episodes.
And also, please review us on iTunes. It's a big deal, Apple Podcasts, because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and visibility is
essential.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela, Emmanuel Ortega, edited by Justin Favela, and our intern is Carla Lagunas, music by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.
Hard to be Chicano.